Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and by my side, in spirit, if not in person, as always, is Steve. How are you doing?
Hello, John. I'm well. I predict an awesome summer this summer for both you and I and the podcast.
Boy, you're taking some big chances there. But fortunately, we have somebody with us that's used to looking at the big picture and a little bit into the future. We have Mike Berlin, the CEO and founder of DecodeM. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I'm looking forward to this one.
Ah, yeah, I hope so. We are too, for sure. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you guys are doing at DecodeM.
Well, I started as a political pollster early in my career, working for an audacious congressman who wanted to be mayor of New York, Ed Koch. And from there, I worked for Bill Clinton when he was president, Hillary Clinton through her Senate, and her a couple of races for president, and then Mike Bloomberg, who was mayor for 3 terms.
Oh, from no, there, I think we just lost 34% of our listeners. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
You make a good point. We advised him not to run in 2009, but that's a different story. We'll go on to the future. From there, I joined Edelman Public Relations, the world's largest PR firm, and created Edelman Berland, which was the research and analytics arm of Edelman. And then after being part of starting two companies and watching sort of the wave of polling and how it integrated, I realized that there were so many other data streams available. And instead of just doing polling, I wanted to get into analytics and consumer analytics, behavioral analytics, social media analytics, and we started DecodeM. And DecodeM is all about decoding data into momentum.
And momentum being the actions you need to mitigate or profit from whatever is coming down the line.
Well, I think that's the best part of momentum. In politics, momentum means getting voter support so that your momentum crests on the day of election day so you can win. In business, momentum means getting people to grow your mass, how big your company is, and keeping velocity so that you can grow your company through ROI and other metrics. And so the challenge for DecodeM was actually quantifying momentum so that it wasn't just an idea, but that it was actually a metric.
Oh, so what are some of the tougher questions you've been getting lately to answer there? I noticed on your website, it says everything is knowable. So if you're dropping that kind of challenge, I imagine you're getting some pretty, pretty interesting questions.
Well, the biggest question that we're getting now is, what does the future look like? We've had this major disruption of COVID. And what I always tell people, you're living in the future right now, that the disruptions that have happened have accelerated our transformation into the future. So the momentum that's happening right now is significant for a number of industries that were just sort of moving along steadily. They've had rapid velocity and acceleration.
There's, I think, a few sort of sectors that I think we have seen and will continue to see some changes. I think healthcare is one of them. FinTech with payments, e-learning as well. What are sort of the top industries where you see this change happening, and how do you think this change will take place?
Well, we're seeing changes. The whole DIY movement is just beginning, right? So the do-it-yourself, the home wellness, the people shifting their priorities. We're just at the starting edge of that. We only got used to that over the summer when we were going through the quarantine. So I think we're seeing profound changes, but we see changes of how we work. Like, what is going to happen with commercial real estate and all the changes that will go on in the office? And now everywhere is an office. So we're going to see changes there. We're seeing changes in professional sports. We're seeing changes in the whole grocery industry. There was a massive transformation that hit of how we buy food, how we go to the store, how we use apps, how we use curbside. So all of those have rapidly changed. And even with our largest client, which is Estee Lauder, the way that consumers use and purchase makeup and perfume in all these areas, they've gone through this major change and rush into the future. And these companies are thriving.
Is that because of the push to e-commerce? It's funny that just today, as I was coming back from a little walk outside, there was a box from Sephora on my doorstep because of my wife. So are you seeing just something beyond the growth in e-commerce, or is there anything that's more fundamental taking shape here?
Well, for the first 6 months, we didn't wear makeup, right? It was this whole movement to, oh, I finally don't have to wear my makeup. I don't have to do my hair. I could just wear the same hoodie or clothes that I was wearing. And then at some point, like August, September, we decided that we were done with that plain look. And so all of a sudden we started to, dress up again and do glow ups. And so your wife's package from Sephora, that is that shows that she had to replenish something, I would assume. Or she bought something new. But that that model of Sephora, which is you find what you want in the store, but you replenish online, that's disrupted. Now you can just find the new stuff online and buy it online.
Huh, yeah, interesting. I haven't given up on the plain look, by the way. I'm still rocking that. But I'm sorry,
What about when you wear your mask? You don't have the moisturizer for your face?
Oh, I don't. Is that a thing? I didn't even know that was a thing.
It's a huge thing. Think about all the, if you wear your mask all day, your skin can get dry. Lots of things can happen, but the bit, like, we're having fun, but the bigger point is that there are new products that have come out to meet the needs of a changing consumer. And the way that we purchase those types of products for self-care or wellness are dramatically different. Have you heard of Maskne? M-A-S-K-N-E?
No,
not at all.
Okay, that's, you're lucky you weren't a victim of it. There was a huge wave of people who were having blemishes on their face and acne because of their mask.
Oh, I see, Maskne. When the world changes, the problems change.
The problems changes.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that really boomed this past year during the pandemic was the buy now, pay later space, just to bring in a fintech example. Do you think that's getting overblown? People are maybe taking too much risk, or the companies are too overvalued?
Well, are you talking about a Klarna who is changing the way people sort of purchase and are purchase products and the payments? Or are you talking about just the whole idea of taking on risk for a year and then paying a year later?
Well, I guess, yeah, the valuations have really rocketed it, forecasting like this enormous growth. And I know the penetration in the US at least is still very low, but there's a lot of competition jumping in. I mean, it looks like a fundamental change. People will be using this at some degree for a while, but I was just wondering if you had seen anything on maybe people taking this credit, and maybe it's not in their credit report and this other debt that they're accumulating or some with these valuations. I think it was a firm that rocketed up, like, I think it's 2.5 times its IPO price.
Klarna, they had an ad on the Super Bowl where you make a purchase, you purchase it with Klarna, and if it's $1,000, instead of you having $1,000 go off your credit card right away, you get 4 payments of $250 each. So your credit card has $250 taken off, but you still have a credit limit of $750, but you have $750 more dollars of debt on that purchase, and it gets taken off every month. This provides a great deal of comfort and security for consumers because they haven't used up all their credit, so they feel like they have more purchasing power. They have the confidence that they can spread it, that they can make the payment and that over the time, and they get to and they feel more comfortable that they haven't overextended themselves. So I believe that that is a trend that is on point emotionally, and it's, again, we hope that the companies are measuring the risk right, but that is that valuation is appropriate.
Oh, okay. Do you happen to have a Peloton at home, by the way?
I do not have.
Okay. I know a firm just does so much of that. I mean, they're just huge with a Peloton, and it's an interesting point that it brings another option, another convenience factor and facilitation for people who need that.
Well, Peloton is absolutely genius because they're leaning into the hybrid gym model, which is going to be another transformation. I said, we're going to change how we work. We're also going to change how we go to gyms. So Peloton gives you the option of working out at home and when you need to, but those people also like to work out at the gym. So Peloton, you can do your bike workout. They now have a fantastic app that allows you to do your strength training, your yoga, your meditation when you want to do it at home. But when you want to go to the gym, that will also be an option. So I don't see gyms declining. I just see that we now have this new option of we can work out at home without having a dedicated space in our house.
Kind of like the Zoomification of everything, huh? Everything's kind of, you're connected, yeah. But you can be distant.
100%. And I give Peloton so much credit for this. Because they were, remember a year ago, we were talking, a year and a half ago, we were talking about Peloton because they were running an aggressive advertising campaign. But they've been on this for several years. What got accelerated is that when the gym option closed down, those people who had a Peloton or had some free weights or were able to really take advantage. And then over time, all you needed was a yoga mat and you could watch your Zoom and go to classes. And so the industry adapted. So I think gyms are going to do fine once we get to, a certain level of vaccinations, within the country. And we're also going to see the diversification of companies like Peloton. It's a win-win for consumers.
Oh, yeah. That reminds me of the Apple Fitness Plus just came out a few months ago. Where you just you work out through your iPad?
And interestingly, Apple might be behind because they don't have a device.
Right. Yeah. They partner for some of their workouts, but yeah, not their own. They, but who partner, knows? They're so secretive.
It wouldn't be bad. Like we're talking about Apple Glass, right? So we know that they're sort of leaning into the future of going beyond wearables and maybe finally delivering on, eyeglassware that could help. Apple has tremendous permission to go into fitness.
Really interesting. So, Mike, you have a book out that's out in paperback, I think, in a few weeks that details essentially how companies can and people also can use maximum momentum. Can you tell me how that concept has been used in the past, say, 15 to 20 years, and maybe some examples that can be more familiar to our listeners?
Well, understanding for investors, momentum is absolutely critical because it means understanding what is going on in society and understanding things that have low momentum, but that are catching on. So we were able, through our social media algorithms, using artificial intelligence, we were able to quantify the conversations that people were having to understand the mass, like how big the conversation was, and then the velocity, how fast it was moving through culture and moving through society. So we were able to capture things when they were just starting, but then we could see how they were growing, and whether that's for a brand or a product or for an issue, understanding the momentum can tell you where things are going in the future, 3 to 6 months out.
Interesting. And what's the biggest example of momentum that you've seen, say in the past 10 years or so?
Well, there's two that compete with each other, and So our momentum is called M factor. Our M factor meter was broken twice. One by President Trump, former President Trump.
Makes sense.
Who really took the idea of social conversation and momentum to an extreme level, right? And to the point that he broke our meter and he might have broken the country. I mean, it was tough with him. The second one was the whole COVID pandemic, which I could show you a chart starting in January of 2020 that just shows the steady increase of momentum that COVID had as it spread from China to Europe and to the US, and how and stayed at a very high level throughout. So those are the two biggest. Then we have social media platforms like TikTok has had huge momentum. The trends that we're now seeing with wearable devices and this whole integration of my phone and my iPad is, all of that sort of integration has happened to a point that many of us can't imagine a life without having a device with us. You can lose your wallet and be just fine. If you lose your phone, you will feel absolutely lost.
Total catastrophe. Completely agree.
Right.
you mentioned two very organic things, right? Trump and COVID-19. Is there anything that can be done to kind of create any sort of synthetic momentum? Is that a thing? Can companies actually harness this power?
Well, I think, you know, what's going on right now that has me absolutely fascinated are SPACs. These special purpose acquisition companies are, if you want to see something that's creating momentum in the world, it's SPACs and just all the energy around them, SPAC money that's looking for companies. Its momentum from March of 2020 to March of 2021 has gone from 2. So it would have been at 2 at this time last year and is up at 47 now. We do not see that type of movement in such a short time. 178 SPACs went public to the tune of $65 billion. I mean, that's pretty amazing if you think about it. SPACs account for 50% of IPOs in the past year. That's as big a momentum as we ever see.
That's interesting. So to kind of put it in perspective here, what were the M numbers for Trump and COVID?
Interestingly, COVID is now still hovering in the high 80s. Trump peaked out at about 80. COVID was at 100 for a while. It's now dropped into the high 80s, low 90s. And yeah, back to at 47.
Oh, wow. So about half of the number of the quotient that you get for COVID. Pretty interesting. Yeah, interesting.
God. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, although to your point, I think that it seems to have decreased, right? It seems like I spend less time now thinking about both Trump and COVID, which is a good thing in my book, which is interesting. But is there anything else that can be done to sort of stop the momentum from going forward? Or is it just more of an organic, natural process?
No, momentum can be stopped in a second, and it typically happens in like a fad, you know. So a lot of brands that are just here today, gone tomorrow can be. It doesn't have another transformation. It just simply disappears, and that can happen. That's actually a lot of companies have to think about what their second, third and fourth act will be. I was there's a company that I was fast. Do you follow Snap at all?
To some extent.
Yeah. So they were talking about. So Snap is, you know, it was such a hot company for a while, and then it sort of lingered out there, and now they're talking about how Snap is now going to its sort of next transformation and putting revenue models across it. And so we're going to start to see a major transformation of a brand that had completely lost momentum and is now regaining it.
Yeah, I actually saw somewhere that they've gained their growth numbers from maybe their peak about 3 years ago or so. I think the conventional wisdom is that they were overtaken by TikTok, right? But it seems like they're
still 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they have held on strong. Have you seen anything as well, any sort of momentum metrics with anything either in payments or financial services? I know that we discussed earlier Klarna and Affirm, but is there anything else that's kind of taking or gaining momentum rather in the fintech space?
The fintech space, I think, is interesting that we're going to see what the next companies to watch. Like we talked a little bit about Klarna, but I think there's all payments and how we pay for things are just now people are finally getting used to them, and it's now going in terms of age is moving up. So what I try to do is look at trends and adoption curves. And so the fintech space is now was heavily populated by Gen Z and millennials. And now we're seeing is moving to, you know, my generation, I'm Gen X, and moving significantly older. And I think that's a really strong, that's a strong opportunity because that's where the money's really at.
What's this TikTok thing you guys are talking about?
Old man John.
Exactly. No, but I do think in fintech, like what are the transformations that are being made is trying to get an old guard to change just the way they think of companies, the way that they use them, the way that they use payments. It's a very different world. So we're finally seeing that transformation taking place.
Is there anything else that you see will either solidify or harden or gain more momentum in 2021, sort of on a broader scale beyond fintech?
The story is not written on commercial real estate. That's the one. That's the one that I'm really most focused on. You know, I think there's a lot of companies that are expecting things to pop back and they will, but they're not going to pop back the same way. So how we work is going to be dramatically different. And then the space that should change, and we'll see if it does or if it doesn't, is education was completely disrupted. And what we found is that that's the oldest school model, that how we teach students, what we teach students, in these old brick and mortar, how we students, the tremendous cost that's associated with it. And so one of the transformations that will be interesting is, are schools just going to try to go back to the way they were, or will they be able to integrate this technology and the remote learning to really better meet the needs of individual students rather than having to deal with them in huge classes? So that's what I'm most interested in.
It's funny you say that. I was sort of a big proponent of you know, distance learning and e-learning prior to the pandemic. But now that I have a school-aged kid, I cannot wait for them to go back to school in person. So I'm a lot less bullish on the idea of like learning your skills through a computer screen. I think it's maybe done for some things, but not for everything.
But shouldn't education transform? So shouldn't, if we would have had time to plan for it, would we have been better able to customize school for the individual student rather than teaching a class? Like, couldn't we get this hyper-personalization that is in every part of our life into the classroom?
That was kind of like what the Khan Academy kind of does that. Did you ever use that,
yeah,
Steve?
I worked for them.
Oh, you worked for them. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry.
I worked for Khan Academy. Sorry. No.
They kind of had that model, right? It was very custom. You could run ahead if you wanted to, and then the classroom time was for applying it, discussions, projects, that sort of thing. But you did the studying and the lecture part on your own time.
Yeah. Why isn't education hyper personalized? It's seemingly easy to do. The curriculum is pretty straightforward, but why is school one size fits all?
Because that's the way my parents did it. Is there a lot of that where, you know, this is the way things are and people don't like change? Do you find that to be one of the barriers you have to overcome, whether it's an organization or societal kind of thing like that?
Isn't that what your whole, that's what fintech's all about, right? I mean, it's coming up with new and interesting ways to approach old problems.
But is there a good way to overcome some people's natural resistance to change? I mean, that seems like a very personal one for a lot of people. Education, you know, I went to school this way. I want my kid to do the same, kind of like a tradition. Do you have good examples where people have, I'm sure it's an ongoing process, but have worked to overcome that kind of institutional or societal change?
Well, it typically takes a disruption or a reason why it can't be that way, and people adapt. I mean, there are so many events where we adopt our behaviors or we adopt our education based on circumstances. And so I think there has to be an evident way of why the old way won't work and why we have to go to something else. And then people are rational about most things. And there's always early adopters and people who sort of grudgingly come along. But they do come along. And so I think we now have a very good case to be made of why things need to transform. The business model and the sort of the practicality of situations usually help it, but also we have to show that the outcomes are better.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges, articulating that, being consistent and showing
benefits. I'll give you another example is shopping. Why do, other than groceries, why do stores have to have inventory anymore? Like, why do you have to have a full store on Madison Avenue in New York? You can have a showroom on Madison Avenue, but you can, your inventory, very few things you need that second. You can, if you get it 4 hours later or if you get it the next day, that's fine. And the benefit is they're likely to have your size and exactly the item that you want, the product that you want delivered to your home or delivered to your office, wherever you want it delivered. So that's going to change.
And there won't be people in line waiting for their iPhones anymore.
Why should there be? Why was there ever people? That was one of Apple's worst decisions. Why should there ever have been anybody waiting for their iPhone?
Yeah, for sure.
It was against everything in their brand of this amazing experience, except for when you buy it.
Some people had very nice tents out there.
They just want to show them off. Yeah, I like the idea of having a showroom in Manhattan, and then say, you know, the actual goods in Hackensack or something, right? And there's been some talk recently about Uber sort of changing their business model to go from, you know, ride sharing and food to now being sort of that last mile delivery as well. Have you seen anything that points to that being a sustainable or even an interesting business model? Sort of the idea of, as you say, shipping things around town in cars as opposed to having them in the stores. Is there any data behind models here, or is this just sort of pie in the sky thinking?
No, this is, I can't obviously disclose who the client was. No, this is based on rigorous research of what consumers want, that we're going to the intersection of shopping and entertainment, and delivery is the least important part.
That's the more sort of commodified part of it, right? It's that's a piece.
Yeah. If you don't get it, it's game over, right? You've got to get it. But no one, you know, and like I said, the immediacy of the purchase, like how many times do you buy something and use it the second you get out of the store? Like very few. Most of it, you use it in a few hours or a few days. So the delivery element was never the interesting part of shopping. The interesting part of shopping was the purchasing the product that you really wanted, and that sense of gratification. And you get that when you purchase it. You don't get that by having the box in your hand.
So it's sort of saying on the shopping lane here, I was just talking to a friend of mine today who likes to buy records from an actual record store. And he finds that he's exposed to a lot more music by, you know, speaking to a clerk and having that sort of experience where with a guy who knows a lot about, say, jazz or something, giving you recommendations as opposed to relying on the Spotify algorithm to suggest things for you. What do you see in terms of that idea of having a more curated experience for consumers and not relying so much on AI derived recommendations and suggestions?
I think it might be past days behind. AI playlists and AI delivered content is driving huge levels of engagement and satisfaction. Your friend, who I have a great deal of empathy with, and I'd love to know what record store he's going to, might be in the past.
Yeah, his argument is that he was able to get stuff. And actually, this is my thing as well, is that I find that for all the recommendation algorithms that we see on, say, Netflix or Spotify, they kind of give you more of the same. Same with YouTube as well. They give you, you know, if you like X, you like X plus one. Whereas his note is that he wants to kind of expand his horizons, and that's impossible to do via an algorithm. But that's something that a person asking you questions in the room can sort of help you find more things that you may enjoy that may not be in the same lane.
Look, I think, like I said, I'm very envious of your friend. I want to hang out with him. Me and many people that we study, I use TikTok in that way to explore. So TikTok will serve you stuff that is not all in your algorithm to expose you to new things. And if you spend time on it, or you swipe, or you share, it will serve you up more of that. But it's something that you had no interest in before, and it was taking a shot. And so I think as we get to more sophisticated algorithms, like, I don't think we're going to always have, you know, the cookies that are, you know, if we searched a pair of shoes, now we keep getting served up pairs of shoes until the end of time. We're going to get more sophisticated algorithms that are going to give us things to try, because they might drive interest and engagement in new things. My experience on TikTok is that it does that, that I find new interest all the time, because I will be exposed to a political issue, a social issue, a trend, a hobby that I have. And so I think we're getting sophisticated algorithms that are willing to take a chance and then can measure your level of interest in that.
Yeah, maybe an element of chaos in there, or randomness too. Because that's what life and that's what humans are like.
TikTok has a huge level of randomness to it, even though it's one of the best algorithms and most sophisticated. It definitely throws in randomness.
You definitely have an interesting company. You get to work on some interesting problems. Is there any company where you see them, you're like, you know, I really would like to work with them, or I really could help them?
The companies that I'm most interested are the disruptors. So any company who wants to turn something upside down and challenge the conventional norms are companies that attract us. So like we were talking about before, today, the reason why education is on my mind is because I was talking to a colleague at Teach for America, and who's done such an amazing job over the past couple of decades of helping educate our students. But it's time for this massive transformation in education. And so that I'm always seeking out companies that want to question the status quo and get them to do things differently. And that's what turns me on. I love working with companies to grow their momentum. But you give me an Airbnb, you give me a Lyft, you give me a Klarna. Those are the companies that really just get me excited.
What would be your advice for Robinhood?
I saw Robinhood's momentum 6 or 7 months ago. I would tell Robinhood to double down, put the pedal to the metal, and take advantage of this momentum it has to attract more people to its platform. I would Robinhood, what's going on in Reddit, all of those things are disrupting an industry that's very insular and likes to do it their way. Robinhood's not perfect. I'm not endorsing them. But the idea of Robinhood and the gamification and democratization of what they're doing is 100% right, without, again, endorsing the company itself, but endorsing the idea. Look, they caused a shitstorm. And you guys know better than I do if it was right or wrong, but it showed the power. It shows the power of the masses to have impact and disruption.
Yeah,
I don't have a point of view on GameStop. Like that's their deal.
Should I buy more? No, not sure. All right.
Did you buy? Would any of us have bought any?
No.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
That's like Russian roulette. I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, actually. So anything people should be worried for? You know, we have some fintechs listening. Anything they should be looking out for, risks in the next year, let's say?
The biggest risk is also the biggest opportunity, is that people are craving intimacy. People are craving personal experiences. People do not want to live in a contactless world. And so the companies that are going to do well are the ones that get us back to social interaction, who allow us to celebrate and be together. So, I think alcohol companies, travel companies, experiences, all of those this should be the year. The most worrisome thing is, and you asked this question at the beginning of the show, when? And that's it's not that it's going to take so long to get there. It's going to take so long for everybody to be comfortable with it. And that's the biggest watch out. So I think fintech is extremely well positioned from now into the future. They won the pandemic and will go forward. As we look forward, those trends and that momentum should stay strong for years to come.
Yeah, that's a great place to wrap up, actually, on a positive note for FinTech. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you. And that's the CEO and founder of Decode M, Mike Berland. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in FinTech news. And thank you for listening.